this is Learning How to Appreciate New Patterns, a Marvel Cinematic Universe Captain America Movieverse fanfic, written by Zara Bethia and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairings James Bucky Barnes, Steve Rogers, Sharon Carter, Natasha Romanova, Sam Wilson, with additional tags for Thanksgiving, Curtain Thick, Domesticity, Steve is not a virgin, Steve is not a Republican. I'm just calling to see what you're bringing to the Turkey Day celebration, Sam says when he calls. Steve is in the middle of watching the most inaccurate description of the war that he's ever heard on a channel that has the audacity to put history in its name when he answers the phone. The Red Skull was not secretly in cahoots with Stalin, Steve answers grouchily. Schmidt barely cared about what Hitler thought, and he was technically working for Hitler. Okay, we have had this discussion before. No good will come of you watching the History Channel. You should probably give up history books, too. This is why our country isn't even in the top 10 academically, Steve complains. People with doctorate degrees sit around debating the social importance of the one time I had tea with Churchill and manage to gloss over the entirety of my childhood in order to be indignant about my supposed Republican ways. He can hear Sam rolling his eyes across the phone line, but unlike with other people, there's sympathy behind the impatience. Nobody wants a Captain America who needed to become a soldier because he knew he had a shitty childhood. It's not enough to have had a glorious mom. You had to have had a perfect dad, too. It's not enough to be Steve Rogers, man. You need to be Clark Kent, too. Perfect little nuclear family with perfect parents. Clark Kent could be a Republican. Steve thinks that Superman is supposed to be the story of immigrants, and he thinks about how much his mother might have liked him if she'd lived long enough to read those comics. He thinks there's no way under hell that a couple of Jewish kids in the middle of the worst economy in the country's history would have made their immigrant metaphor in favor of Hoover. The History Channel probably thinks otherwise, though. Steve scowls at the pictures of the Howling Commandos that come across the screen and mutes the TV before he can hear what utter nonsense they're going to spout about his team this time. It's petty, but he feels like he would be less petty if people weren't so foolish. Before he died, my father was an abusive jerk, and our neighbor once told my mother that the only thing that Joe Rogers ever did right was die. Ugh, that's harsh, Sam says. Pretty sure nobody ever says that about Jonathan Kent. They quoted your neighbor, by the way, in one of the books about your life. The historian lost his tenure and is now working at a shitty community college in the Midwest. Indiana, I think? Ohio, Steve says grumpily. Indiana is the place where the lady who wrote the book on Mr. Bradley is. Yeah. Can we talk about Turkey Day yet, or do you need a bit more? There's a flap of wings in the background, and Steve is pretty sure that's Sam's bird, which is weird, considering that they are talking about a holiday known for stuffing birds and all. Because, don't get me wrong, we can bitch about Isaiah Bradley all day long if you need to. What do you need me to bring? Steve asks. Because the last time they'd bitched about Isaiah Bradley, Sam had detoured for 10 minutes about what a great tongue the man's son has. And really, Steve is cranky enough without another reminder about how single he is. I figured between the three of you, you and the ladies would have everything taken care of. I am not going to be the man who tells Widow or Carter that you think they're here cooking up a bunch of food for us, Sam snorts. Not on your life. That's good, because that's not what I said. Implied. Heavily, heavily implied. A picture of Bucky flashes across the screen, and it quickly flashes to a monument in Arlington that makes Steve's stomach clench. Ridiculous, since Steve knows where Bucky is, and it's not at the bottom of a gorge. But Steve's stomach can't be bothered to care, so Steve turns off the damn television and all of its historical inaccuracy. You're inaccurate about that, too, Steve thinks spitefully, as the picture of the monument fades. So we aren't going to be eating anything on Thanksgiving? Steve asks. Because I like you, but if I have to bring all the food, I'm just staying here. See, this is why friends don't let friends watch the History Channel. Because friends turn into Grinches way ahead of schedule. You're not allowed to be a Grinch before Black Friday, Steve, Sam says. There's mocking there, yes, but it's gentle enough that Steve wants to lean into it. It's dangerous to feel that way, because there's only been two other people who ever could have had that effect. One of them's a grandmother. The other's a very complicated situation right now. Am I bringing you stuffing for your bird, Wilson? Steve retorts. See, that could almost be innuendo, Sam answers back. I'm going to pretend it's that, instead of a cruel taunt about my buddy Redwing. Steve might not be the virgin that his Avengers teammates think he is. He really, really isn't. But he still blushes at Sam's comment. Because Sam is handsome, and if things were different... I don't think your ladies are into sharing any more than they already do, he murmurs. We'd probably need a bigger bed. Sam's voice, when he talks, is all Harlem. And sitting there, alone in his apartment, Steve remembers that first blowjob in a club in Harlem in 1939, on a detour home from art school. Sitting there, alone in his apartment, Steve is acutely aware that there are not any blowjobs in his immediate future. So, no stuffing. Pie? Cutter and Widow haven't gotten around to ordering any dessert, Sam says agreeably. Because, yes, that's what we are doing. Ordering food. You can judge all you want, Rogers, but you will stop judging when you've tried the apple walnut cranberry dressing that comes from Ricketts Bakery. Not sure those flavors belong together, Steve says. But your depression self will try it out anyway, because you can't resist trying new food, Sam says. Consequence of growing up poor. I've got your number on that, Rogers. It's true enough, so Steve doesn't argue. My depression self is going to feel pretty weird buying all that sugar to make a pie, you know. It'll be good for you, Sam promises. Go to the store, yell at the sugar prices, come home, and bake me a pie. It'll be good for me, but you're the one benefiting? Yep. Start slow, though. Something simple, like pumpkin. Widow'd prefer the pecan, but with your sugar issues, I think we'd better start with something that doesn't require an entire crop of sugarcane to be produced, Sam says. It's those orders that send Steve to the grocery store. He leaves a note for Bucky on the fridge, just in case. Gone shopping. Back soon. That is how Steve finds himself standing in the middle of the baking goods aisle, looking at bags of sugar that are $3 apiece. Steve understands inflation. Really, he does. It's not difficult, and he does not have to be Howard Stark. Or Tony Stark, to understand it. He gets it. But the price of sugar is ridiculous. Steve stands there for a long time, occasionally getting pushed out of the way by impatient holiday shoppers. Sometimes politely, but mostly impatiently. He's still standing there when the impatient mothers, grandmothers, fathers, and husbands take a break from pushing him out of the way in order to allow a young couple to do the same. Two young men. The fact that they are a couple is both obvious and not particularly shocking to Steve anymore. Everything about this century is loud and obvious, and this is one of the few times that Steve's glad to see it. Blueberry this year, right? If we show up at Aunt Jackie's bearing any fruit but apple, we're going to go home hungry. Hard to be hungry if we have a whole blueberry pie to split between us. Steve listens to them bicker, watches them slip their hands into each other's palms, and remembers walking past Mr. Allen's store, back when winters were the cause of Bucky's frown for entirely different reasons than they are today. He remembers pulling up the top of his shirt to cover a nose that he'd been certain was frostbitten, and coveting the sweet treats in the windows. All that fudge. We could just snitch a piece, Steve, and the old rich miser would never notice.
I'd notice, Bucky.
He remembers standing there, next to Bucky, both of their hands so cold, and both of them unable to reach over and just take each other's hands and lend each other a little warmth.
I am not spending the night baking two pies, Sugar Plum. I am not missing out on Aunt Jackie's cornbread stuffing, Sugar Pie.
Your pun was so much worse than mine. He remembers sitting next to Bucky, years later, in a tent that felt thinner than their shirts had ever been. He remembers poking field rations, being cold despite the serum, and enjoying the warmth of Bucky's breath on his cheek as he leaned over and made a promise that would go unfulfilled.
This shit is awful. Times like these, I regret all the times I let you talk me out of stealing Mr. Allen's fudge Rogers.
When we get back, we'll buy up the entire window display, Buck.
Promise?
The couple leaves, and Steve is alone with his memories. That is how Steve ends up buying 10 bags of sugar. It isn't Steve's first trip to the store that day. In fairness, Steve's never actually made fudge before. It takes an additional trip to the store to get cream and extra butter before he is able to have all of the ingredients. It takes an additional half an hour of research to figure out what he's doing wrong. The first two batches do not turn out well. But batches 3 through 8 do, in fact, turn out well. And he's standing there, surveying batches and wondering if he should have made Sam's pie first, 12 hours later, when Bucky finally comes home. Bucky's been on a mission for S.H.I.E.L.D., and anybody could tell that, just by the tired look on his face, the dirt on his cheeks, and a faint, not-home smell that Steve can't quite place. Bucky didn't used to look tired, even when they were starving and cold. Steve thinks unhappy thoughts about Karpov, and gestures to the rows of fudge, some still cooling.
Hungry?
Steve can see Bucky mentally counting the rows.
Did you seriously make 6 batches of fudge?
He asks, a little uncertainly.
Because I thought I was supposed to be the crazy one here.
Torn between wanting to remind Bucky that he isn't crazy and to remind him that it's 2013 and nobody's going to blame him for being traumatized by his experience the way they used to, Steve instead decides to correct Bucky's math.
I made 8, actually. First 2 didn't make it.
Bucky looks over the rows again and gives a short, gasping, wheezing sound that sounds a lot like a laugh. It's almost a laugh, and it would be if Bucky hadn't completely forgotten how to laugh at all. But Steve feels like he has forgotten, and Steve suddenly feels a whole lot less terrible about having made 8 batches of fudge. Because even a small laugh out of Bucky these days is worth 12 hours of labor.
If this is what happens when they send me on a local mission, I hate to see what you're going to do when they send me out of the country,
Bucky says.
You know, if they ever end up trusting me that much.
Maybe it's the last bit that makes Steve start rambling. I was just standing there in the store, and I was thinking about Mr. Allen's fudge and how the war didn't end the way we wanted it to. I was angry about inflated sugar prices and fudge we never got to eat. And there was this couple, and I...
Steve trails off and bites his lip, because Bucky startles a little bit when he says couple. And, well, he probably should. Sharing body heat because you were freezing to death does not equal being a couple.
And that had been years ago, anyway. Steve makes himself shrug with the kind of purpose that would have looked effortless on Natasha, but he's pretty sure it looks hopeless on him.
Ghosts of Thanksgiving's past, he says lightly.
Bucky reaches around him,
picking up a piece of the chocolate fudge, before Steve can tell him that it really does need more time to cool. He bites into it, and Steve's never been so glad that he never moved into Stark Tower. All of those little invasive technological gadgets that Stark no doubt has have absolutely no right to capture the contented look on Bucky's face. No, this moment belongs in their cramped little non-billionaire apartment in Brooklyn, right next door to Sam, Sharon, and Natasha.
"This is amazing," Bucky says, after a swallow that makes Steve ache all the way down to his toes.
"Your mama's recipe?"
"Alton Brown's," Steve says reluctantly. "Mama never had the stuff to actually make fudge. Closest we got was a birthday cake once."
Bucky nods, and Steve appreciates that Bucky, Sam, and Natasha are the only people in Steve's life who don't give him pitying looks when he mentions his childhood.
Even Dr. Banner does it, and from what Steve's heard, Dr. Banner's life was a whole lot worse.
"I think she would have approved," Bucky says, and there's a small quirk of his lips around another handful of fudge.
"So, peanut butter, chocolate, what the hell are those?"
"This is marshmallow, and this one is marshmallow, peanut butter, and chocolate," Steve admits.
Bucky looks doubtful, better than anybody that Steve has ever known. Okay, Sam and Sharon are currently giving them a good run for his money, but time and experience are in Bucky's favor.
"See, I wasn't sure that the whole 8 batches of fudge was a sign that you were feeling decadent, until you told me that you decided to dump your entire kitchen into a batch of fudge."
This batch really should have more time to cool, but nobody has goaded Steve quite the way Bucky has. That 4-year age difference between them has never given Steve an unfair advantage in that arena at all. So he snatches a piece of the still warm fudge and thrusts it into his mouth. It's warm and gooey and too sweet. It's over the top the way everything in this century is, but Steve can't be as resentful as he was when he first woke up. Not with Bucky standing right there in front of him, watching expectantly. Steve licks the sticky remainders of the fudge off his fingers and swallows.
"It's decadently delicious," he argues.
Bucky is never unreadable to Steve, but the Winter Soldier had been, and for a moment that line is between them again.
"Maybe I should taste it," Bucky says slowly.
The second piece is even harder to tear away from the still warm batch, but Steve manages to pull away a chunk and starts to hand it to Bucky. He means it as an innocent gesture until his hand is halfway to Bucky's mouth. He's never initiated things between them. At first, it didn't seem appropriate. Bucky's younger, after all. But then they had settled into a pattern, and that pattern had always been one that Steve had enjoyed. But waking up 70 years into the future has thrown all of his favorite patterns into disarray, and part of dealing is learning how to appreciate new patterns. So, halfway to Bucky's mouth, Steve decides on a purpose that Bucky's always been responsible for tossing in Steve's lap. Bucky's mouth meets him halfway, wrapping around his fingers so hesitantly that Steve might have second-guessed himself. Maybe on any other day, any day in which he hadn't spent 12 hours baking nostalgia-fueled fudge, Steve might have. But on this day, there's still a stickily sweet coating on the back of Steve's throat as he replaces his fingers with his mouth. It's only after that taste has been replaced by the salty, bitter taste of Bucky that Bucky's still fudge-flavored fingers curl into the hair of Steve's neck as Bucky whispers, "I missed this."
"Me too."
"Yeah, the fudge kind of gave you away there."
"Well, I did promise you the entire window display once. I'm a few years late, but the war didn't exactly end the way we thought it would."
Bucky's quiet for so long
that Steve starts to worry that he said the wrong thing.
"I, for one, didn't predict the chest hair that you were suddenly going to develop," Bucky says, finally.
That's an odd train of thought, but Bucky trying to actually make the conversation less serious has to be the healthiest thing he's done in a long time. So Steve lays there and soaks up the sight of the happiest he's seen Bucky in a long time.
"Don't have to worry about lice as much anymore,"
Steve answers, as Bucky yawns into his chest.
"It's a little weird having it there. Still getting used to it."
"Describes a lot of things in this century," Bucky answers. His fingers run through the hair on Steve's chest as he adds,
"Sometimes I think I could get used to the weird, though."
At the end of the day, it's all Sam's fault. And that's one of the many, many reasons Steve is listening for Why I Am Grateful for Sam Wilson come Thanksgiving Day.
"Which is nice and all," Sam says, once they're sitting around the table with four of the remaining batches of fudge between them. "But I still never got my pie."
Steve's pretty sure he's going to be hearing that for a good long time. It's the kind of good-natured sarcasm that only good friends can appreciate from each other. Sitting around that table in the apartment with Sharon, Sam, Bucky, and Natasha, Steve is thankful for the second chance at forming that kind of friendships that could have been lost forever when his plane went down. Later, when he and Bucky return to their apartment, and Bucky doesn't hesitate before crawling into bed next to Steve, Steve silently gives his thanks for that as well. The end.